Well, hello there. You have in your ears now the latest Culturefile digital single, a special programme that is just for podcast listeners. And this time we're listening with Kate Carr, the sound artist who performs in Dublin this week and is heading to Rathmullen in Donegal for the Ramp Festival after that, and details of all of that at the end of the piece. Kate Carr is a recordist who, rather than heading to remote environment, likes to work with, for example, the urban soundscapes of London and other locations filled with sonic trails of humans. She spoke to Culturefile's Niamh Daly about her sonic practice and principles, as well as her favourite recording spots.
I have one spot I really like in London. It's a great location for just listening, which is Blackfriars Station, which is on the Thames. And it just sounds amazing when the tide is coming in and the river is rushing up against the gritty, rocky kind of foreshore of the Thames. There's often buskers there as well. It's usually more to the, I suppose, posher end of busking in that area because it's kind of near to the Tate and whatnot. So you might have someone playing violin, and the trains themselves make their own kind of whine and whistle. And actually, I love that sound when the trains are coming and the rail starts to sing, but all with the bustle and the echo of people walking on a train station. Kate Carr is my name, and I'm a field recording practitioner based in London. Field recording is just a term that's used to describe a really big range of things, I suppose, but at its core is recording outside of the studio. So it can be anything from recording in a field itself, recording the sounds of grass, to unconventional ways, I suppose, of recording. Even bands you could describe as field recording if you're trying to record it outside the studio. One of the things that field recordings really useful for is thinking about the sounds of place, how we experience connection to home, or how we experience unfamiliarity, I guess, in part through our conscious or unconscious knowledge or lack of knowledge of the soundscape within which we are both contributing to and listening to all the time. So I'm really interested in that. And in my practice, I have over the years turned to lots of different kinds of microphones, I suppose, as tools for accessing different layers of the soundscape in our shared environment. So things like contact mics, which might give us the capacity to listen to how, for example, footfalls might be vibrating different structures like bridges or pavements, or how traffic itself vibrates our kind of built structures. So I've got lots of recordings of large vehicles vibrating fences, and that would sound like the inside of metal, how you might think about when you strike metal, but if you can think about that as a much louder sound and you're existing within the striking of the metal. And more natural, I suppose, natural kinds of phenomenon too, like how the weather and the way rain strikes fences, or rain strikes other types of surfaces, how we might use like the contact mic to gather the sound of that interaction through the solid. So it has a very different kind of sound to the one that we are used to accessing through our ears. One of my favorites is rain hitting simple wire fence, and that will sound a lot like the sound of the lasers in Star Wars, like a ping, like a sharp ping. And then a kind of decay as the wire continues to vibrate after it's been touched by the raindrop. That's an amazing sound when lots of rain is hitting a fence. It's a very dense kind of sound, but with its own particular kind of timbre and characteristics. So pleasing sound. I suppose one that springs to mind relatively recently that I love and that I've used loads, it's the sound of a drain on the bank of the Thames. And the Thames is super tidal, so as it rushes in and out, in this particular instance, this drain sounded so strongly like it was breathing. Yeah, I had recorded it for ages. I just sat there like, oh my God, it's the breathing drain. So I loved that sound. And just the ideas that it's able to convey about cities and our structures and this idea of kind of a living infrastructure that we all are participating in certain ways, or that the infrastructure itself takes on these human characteristics, at least in our own imagination. So I love that one. Ones I don't like, I suppose it's interesting to think about this in relation to field recording as well and its histories, because kind of the sounds that have been left out of field recording are actually often the sounds of us. So, you know, with a preoccupation of recording nature in its kind of historical construction, field recording has taken out, I suppose, the sounds of the recordist's body, the rustle of the clothes, the handling noise on the mics. And I suppose it's hard to love those sounds in a way, but I also think they're quite interesting to sometimes include within field recordings, because it gives you that little hint of the process that has generated these recordings, the different bodies that have been involved in the physical space of recording, and gestures towards what's often left out. So, yeah, sometimes I don't always love these glitches of recording practice, you know, the wind noise that distorts everything, or you drop the mic and it makes a dreadful sound or something like this. But I do occasionally like to also include them as kind of that gesture towards the act of recording itself. I think another really interesting thing when you think about the past of field recording and its historic preoccupations with like nature and this idea of the field itself being predominantly a field that is situated in like natural recordings, whereas today we see practitioners expanding massively this site of the field within field recording. So composers who are thinking about the inside of their own homes, domestic space, as a field of field recording. In the case of two quite well-known American practitioners, in Claire Rousey and Moore Ease, the site, the field of field recording in Rousey's case is a breakup. So the sounds of domestic space when you're going through this sort of very intense, obviously, and distressing experience of separating from your partner. And actually, I think that idea of the field of being domestic space, you might think, oh, domestic space is, you know, it has these certain sounds. But what Rousey's work, I think, illustrates to us, or kind of lets us think about, is how the sounds of domestic space actually massively change depending on what emotional state we are in. I mean, I know when I've had kind of difficult breakups, you know, the sounds of your space, like the silence, can be so loud and so unsettling. Or even just the everyday clank of dishes can be sometimes in some settings really comforting, just part of the hustle and bustle of activity within the home. But obviously in a breakup or within a strained domestic environment, like those sounds, you hear them and you experience them completely differently. So I think that's like another interesting aspect to Rousey's work. But Maurice and Claire Rousey also explore the spaces and sites of their own friendships. The idea that like inside a bar could be a site of field recording. I think that's one of the really exciting changes, I suppose, that as someone now who's been practicing field recording for more than 15 years, I'm really happy to see that change. I think it gives us lots of really interesting things to think about in terms of how we share our worlds with other people and how sound helps us to think about that. But also it has this interesting intersection, and I suppose you could say challenge, to how field recording itself has been constituted and understood in the past. I've done this ongoing series of works, just mainly uploaded to Bandcamp, called Making Do's. I mean, this was a sort of a studio exercise I undertook. I sort of wanted not a daily, but maybe a weekly practice where I was just experimenting. I mean, I think you can get very outcome orientated. We live in such a busy world, like I'm always juggling many things. So I was like, no, actually, I just want to kind of explore what I have in my studio and what it sounds like. So that's why I kind of had these different making do's. One is making do with a kitchen in the cellar of a crumbling mansion. One is making do with a broken ukulele turned into a sculpture of wire, rubber bands, and rubbish. I love rubber bands because they give me that capacity to play like roughly termed notes. So kind of wonky melodies can slightly make their way into the piece. And then I did another called Making Do with a bicycle and a rubber band. And it came out of a particular residency program run by the Eclectic Group in London. And it was during lockdown, so we were thinking about sort of some of the changes that had come into play. And one of those was the rise of more and more people riding bicycles. So I made a piece which was me making a soundscape with my bicycle in my kitchen using the bicycle and the rubber bands. I've become more and more influenced, I guess, as well, and involved in improvisation, which is very unexpected, I suppose, coming from field recording. But this idea of kind of making do with the objects around me, but as someone who comes from a field recording background rather than any kind of instrumental or musical practice, is something that I've become more and more enthusiastic about, like having this experience with the different kind of mics, the contact mics in particular, bringing that field recording practice into a live context where the field recording technologies meet the objects of performance is something that is probably one of the major kind of planks of my practice now, which is a massive change for me over the last, let's say, three or four years. It's a different time frame because like field recording is quite slow. You've got to plug everything in, you've got to attach it all. It's easy to spend a day, half a day field recording, just experimenting with different mics in the same setting, activating things in different ways. I'm always surprised, and it's quite tiring field recording because you're spending lots of time crouching and like putting your body in these kind of high energy positions or held positions, like holding your body quite still. Whereas the improvisation is obviously usually unfolding over a performance of, let's say, half an hour. So it's very different in that regard. But I think the inventiveness or the creativity that it asks for or that it offers you the opportunity to explore are kind of quite similar. Like, you know, I'll try this here, I'll try this there. But also, again, this is the first time I've ever thought about this, but if I would tie it back to field recording, it's also the listening, you know, it's listening to what's there, listening to, is there wind? Are there people walking by? Is there heavy machinery, vibrating structures? You know, all this kind of stuff is what my historic practice has been. And then to bring it into improvisation, I've found it, I wouldn't say easy, but I feel like I've got that listening practice where it's what sounds are around me and what sounds then do I want to use that combination of my field recording kit and the objects I have with me to join with the soundscape around me. I like that. I like thinking about that similarity, actually. Rubbish Music is like a live performance duo with Ian Chambers, and we have just two albums, Upcycling, which I guess, you know, this idea of reusing materials, turning them into something new, something useful, something interesting, hopefully, in the case of the album. And then Fatbergs, which Fatbergs are these like, are a particular problem in the UK, like loads of fat and grease and nappies, wipes, like loads of gross things, congealing together to create these giant solid masses that clog the sewers. So we perform only with rubbish. So what we're thinking about, you know, with sound and with this idea of Fatbergs is like how sound can help us think about these discombobulated kind of like objects coming together, making something that's far greater than the sum of its parts, if you could use that term, but far different. Very different to the sum of its parts. So we're using like, we're not actually trying to record the sound
all
of
these things we discard, the sewers,
but we're using
and have
some
alive
types of rubbish that might eventually transform
far beyond
into Fatbergs,
our,
as well as other
as consumers,
other types of rubbish
moment
as a way of
usage of them.
And in the case of Fatbergs, it's quite a kind of instructive example, obviously, because it goes on to have this very vivid life, which has very real effects on city life. I live on a super busy road, a bit too busy, even though I like noise, but this one is very noisy. But I still, like, I find it just kind of breathtaking and staggering that I can be in my lounge room and the noise of, because it's a very performative space in terms of car stereos. So I could be in a nightclub just for an instant. Like, I'll be there pounding really bass heavy, and you can sometimes hear the car itself vibrating because of all the bottom end, and you're just in the lounge room like what, doing whatever I was doing, just like whoa, and then it's over, and then because the light changes and it's gone, and it's just like that's amazing. Like, that is an amazing thing about sound. Like, for that second I'm in that same space with all the neighbors around, and obviously the person in the car, in this shared space for, let's say, 10 seconds, and then it's a completely different space. You know, that you know, urban life is amazing, these moments, and the powers that we have of amplification, I suppose, as well, is amazing in that sense of how it propagates into our spaces, and obviously in ways that can be incredibly invasive and annoying, but also ways that are so humorous and just funny about how we live, how we advertise that we're here. You know, here I am in my new car with its amazing stereo, and I'm just going to announce that to the whole neighbourhood. Like, I just find it really interesting. I really like the swirl of noises that enter my ears as I move through London. I think I'm always, maybe not cataloguing, but letting that wash and interaction of sound be part of my everyday experience of what it means to be a human living in a very densely populated city. So I love that. And sometimes, like, I still have moments where I'll stop. Like, I stop quite a bit and I'm like, what's that sound? And it gives me always stuff to think about, like, how are those sounds coming together? What am I not hearing? What sounds have been masked in this particular location? Like, I often think about, like, what would I hear if I could put my contact Mike if I could, you know, attach that to something in the vicinity and access what kinds of vibrations are now resonating in this infrastructure. Like, I like that my practice has given me that I can really enjoy public space, even if it's noisy. I can enjoy that swirl, that clash of sounds.
Kate Carr there in conversation with Culture Files' Niamh Daly. And Kate Carr will be playing at the Kirkos Ensemble Space, now at 1 Little Green Street in Dublin, on the 17th of July with David Donoghue, who's also the collaborator on her new album, Storm and Its Aftermath, which is released the following day, July 18th. I hope you're getting this all down, when Kate Carr is off to Donegal for a workshop and gigs at the Ramp Festival. northernlightsproject.org/ramp for details.